Welcome to Michigan HockeyCast 4.6. Maybe not a football win, but a hockey sweep is fun, and how it was done was rather impressive. An interesting weekend, Alex. Hockey goes to Penn State and football goes to Penn State, and they don't play on the same day. Like, this is a really, really good idea. I mean, I remember when hockey went to the Big Ten, people were like, hey, you know, they should have basketball and hockey travel together. And then, you know, people will go and you can do a whole weekend and put the basketball game in the middle of the day. And, you know, you can have two or three games. And this is sort of like that because they're doing it the previous 2 days. Like, hockey's going Thursday, Friday, and then football is Saturday. Is this something that you would think about ever, like, doing as a fan?
Maybe. It's definitely a good concept. It's just a lot of days to be in the one town. You know, if you're a visitor on the road, you have to get in there Thursday afternoon for the Thursday game, then the Friday, and then Saturday. And it's just a matter of, you know, in this case, is there enough stuff to do in state college?
Well, that's a different question for state college specifically.
Because it's not like you can stay in state college for the weekend and then go do something else somewhere else. Like, state college is in the middle of nowhere. So you will be, unless you want to drive like 2.5 hours to Pittsburgh and back, it's you're going to be stuck there.
So you've been to state college, right?
Yep.
You were there in 19?
19, yep.
For the bell drop, yeah. Did you guys stay in state college?
No. Yeah. We stayed, I don't remember where it was. Somebody was suggesting to me we were supposed to stay in, I think it was Jimmy Stewart's birth town. It's like somewhere near State College. Let me pull this up. There's a museum there. I don't remember if that's where we actually stayed, but it was about an hour or 2 hours, Indiana, Pennsylvania. Yeah. That's the name of Jimmy Stewart's birth town. The Christmas tree capital of the world.
Well, that's interesting.
I don't know if that's actually where we stayed, but that's where I was told they stayed the last time we had sent people there. So, when I was planning the trip, it was our idea was to drive a couple hours outside of State College and then stay the night.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever stayed in State College, and I've been to Penn State for football 5 times.
It's a lot of times.
Well, yeah, I mean, I went. Oh, geez. I went to the 06 game, which was one of the best games I've ever been to. And then the Rich Rod games were not great. And then the 13 trip, everyone probably knows that story from MGO blog lore. And then we went
that
in
game
15.
Never happened. Tigers Red Sox was the only important thing that night.
So, but every time we stayed outside of town because there's like, you know, it's like going to Ann Arbor. Like, you can't stay in Ann Arbor on a game weekend unless you know someone there, because prices for hotels are like $700 and there's just no point. But,
well, and my memory of it was after the game ended, we sat in the parking lot for probably 2.5 hours.
Oh, yeah. It's not easy to get out of there either.
Yeah, because that was the same night that, you know, the Astros famously sort of cheated and beat the Yankees in the walk-off. Remember where Altuve refused to have his shirt taken off? Yeah. That was that night. And so we got out of the stadium and walked to the car, and the game had just been sent into the ninth inning. Cause I think if I remember correctly, weren't the Astros up going into the top of the ninth, and then the Yankees came back to tie it? And then the Astros,
I think so. That sounds right.
Yeah. I remember tracking that on my phone, but we sat in that parking lot forever.
At least you were in the parking lot. Most of the time I was there, I was in a field.
The other thing I remember, well, okay, it was kind of a field, but the thing I remember was they gave us the media parking pass just in the middle of the tailgate. Like, it was
like
our,
your pass was in the middle of a tailgate?
Yeah, it was like if you got a media pass to the Big House, but the pass is for like the golf course or Pioneer.
So you get out and someone offers you a burger?
Well, it was the most stressful like thing of my life driving through that, because we had to go down this long, you know, big field, long rows of parking, and you're going down there, and then you turn into the aisle that you're spot is supposed to be in, and the people don't move. There's cars on both sides and people, you know, everywhere tailgating, and you start driving through and the people just stand there. And then, you know, you're driving at like 3 miles an hour, but you pull up and then you're like waving, like, get out of the way.
Get out of the way.
And still, I mean, you drive and they are right there. I mean, if you hit a pothole and your hands swerve, you're going to run someone over. Like, it was gritting your teeth level of stressful. And then the spot was really small. And yeah.
So do you tailgate?
No.
Like, ever?
No. This is a discussion I was having the other night with someone.
Yeah, I don't tailgate either. So I don't really know what it's like in these places when people are set up and then someone else is going to come in and also set up. So, do you move or do you wait till people are in next to you? I don't really understand how this works.
I've gone tailgating before, but, you know, once someone comes with their spot, like, because I would tailgate at our family spot, which is a set parking spot. Around by like Chrysler, you know, like where the media entrance to Chrysler is, where it faces
your family
side.
Has their own.
It comes
area
with around. A, yeah, it's like a pass.
Oh, I
right?
see.
So
okay,
spot
yeah.
120, whatever. And so if you are there and someone else's spot isn't been filled yet, and then you've got people standing there, or you've got chairs there, then when that person shows up, you have to pick up the chairs and get out of the way.
Would think so.
Yeah.
That seems to make sense.
But people don't always listen. And that sort of thing. Tailgating is bad. That's my take.
Yeah, I used to go around to people's tailgates when I was a lot younger, probably 10 some years ago. I knew people were tailgating. I'd try to go and, oh yeah, hey, how are you doing? And talk to these people. But it was never really my thing because I'd rather just sort of watch football.
Yeah.
Like,
it's a lot of standing around and talking to people.
Yeah.
Is not
and
really
I'd just be
thing.
Like, hey, why don't you guys come over and we'll all watch football
game. Yeah, I'd much rather be sitting at home watching the games than sort of standing around waiting to go into the game. But that's my – the other thing about Penn State, this is our last note.
okay.
I remember we went to the dairy store, which I am
like a lot of flavors of like Paterno peach or something.
You know, it's the peachy Paterno flavor.
Okay.
Yeah. Very distressing, but I'm still mad that Michigan doesn't have a dairy store.
We have Washtenaw Dairy.
It's not a dairy. It's not a school licensed dairy store. This is what I propose.
Is that necessary?
This is the way for Brian to give back to the university. Donate several cows so we can get a dairy store bill.
Brian needs to put cows in his backyard. That would be great. I think he told me one time he bought a whole cow like of meat and tried to make something of it. And then he told me never to do that. So don't buy a whole cow, I guess. All right. It's officially hockey time. I think we've gotten through that part of the podcast. So Michigan plays Michigan State. We talked about this coming in last week as sort of Michigan State doesn't have a lot of talent, but they make you nervous because if they get the first goal, then like it turns the hockey game into like this siege shelling. But in this case, Michigan happens to get the first goal in both nights and changes the flow of the game, thankfully, because I've had enough of those other kinds of games. And I mean, this game started like one of my notes was like it started almost like the football game where if there was a break that Michigan could have, they got it in the first like 8 minutes. I think they had 5 odd man rushes, including 3 on the penalty kill, which I don't know that I've ever seen on like one penalty kill. But it starts with back to back 2-on-1s with Beniers and KJ that are literally like identical. Like KJ gets the puck right near the blue line, gets the puck in, and Beniers is cutting down the slide. And he hits him with a pass, and the first chance is goes wide, or it's just tipped wide by the goalie. And within 30 seconds to a minute, we get like a redux, and this time Beniers nails it, and it's 1-0. It could have been 2, and thankfully the exhale goes out of all the Michigan fans who are like, all right, Michigan State might actually have to come out and play.
Yeah, well, that first period, just sort of everything, it was really a coherent narrative, right? Michigan just was on top of Michigan State. And I think that what you really saw as emblematic of that is right after the first goal where Michigan State gets a 5-minute power play, and you're kind of like, well, this is interesting. This could be an opportunity for Spartans to get back in the game, especially because we talked about they don't get a lot of offense at 5-on-5. They need to score on the power play. Now they get 5 minutes to do that, and that was a disaster.
And this year,
that was one
of
the worst 5-minute power plays you can think of, because Michigan got several chances, legitimate scoring chances, shorthanded, and MSU got maybe one good look in those 5 minutes. I mean, Michigan outchanced MSU for 5 minutes while shorthanded.
So they got a 5-minute major power play because Garrett Van Wy was tossed pretty much, like you said, right after the Michigan early goal for a hit to the back of the head, which to me is kind of ironic because he got cross-checked in the back of the head in the previous game against Wisconsin, and they go and review it. And I could see from my spot in the press box, and it wasn't like super up close view, but I was like, that looks like he got hit in the head. And they say no hit to the head. And in this case, he gets thrown out like, what, 3-4 minutes into the game.
Yeah, it was definitely sort of like, you know, just
spin
come on,
the wheel,
man,
of penalties.
You never really know.
Targeting.
Yeah. What's going to get called and what isn't.
So on Michigan State's power play, you alluded to this. Michigan, I have written down, they had a 3-on-2, a breakaway. I think it was Beniers again, and another 3-on-2. So 2 3-on-2s and a breakaway, all saves for Pierce Charleston, who played instead of DeRitter, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I actually talked to someone in the press box, and they were like, we actually kind of think that Charleston's a little better.
Well, again, we saw Charleston last year. He was very strong when we got to, see him. His workload hasn't been as great, but with a tandem like that, you can roll them both on both nights, and that's what MSU did. So
Michigan gets a power play right after Michigan State does. It's a 2-minute one for this one, and they looked pretty good to start. They got a Brisson shot from his spot, and Duke had a chance in tight. And then I think it was probably about a minute in, Samuskevich was taken down, and now it's a 5-on-3, where Michigan started a little bit slowly with their 5-on-3, but KJ hit Maddie from one dot on to the other, and he finished, and it's 2-0. And at that point, you're like, we're right on the verge of, if they get one more break, it's going to be really, really tough for Michigan State.
Yeah, pretty much. This MSU team doesn't score a lot, and whenever you get that quick 2-0 lead, it really opens it up.
But that didn't happen, because after a almost near perfect, I would say, first period, Michigan does get another power play and doesn't take advantage of that one. Lambert actually hit the post. So you give him the inside instead of the outside of the post, maybe it's 3-0 and a different story. But Michigan State actually has a pretty good shift, and they get the puck in deep. You said something to me about how it wasn't a great shift for the Beniers line on defense, but the puck gets in deep, and I believe it was Sasana who got it down there for Michigan State, pretty active defensive. And then he gets there's a really nice centering pass to the high slot where Krieger's wide open, and he just beats Portillo from there, and it's 2-1. And all of a sudden, like, this sort of awesome start is, it's not negated because Michigan's still up one, and they've shown that they can, what they can do against Michigan State in terms of like the talent gap and everything. But 2-1 after the first period is very different than, you know, 2 inches away from being 3-0.
It was a really frustrating end to that period because Michigan was just all over MSU for the whole period for about 19 minutes. And then that last minute, it just, everything kind of flopped defensively, guys standing around, and Spartans just are kind of skating circles around Michigan, and then they're able to get a goal in, and now all of a sudden it's only 2-1, and the game is very much not over yet. Michigan State could very conceivably come back from you know, only 2-1 down with 40 minutes to do it. So it definitely felt like, well, there's definitely the format here. There's definitely the template for Michigan to dominate MSU. They just need to get back to doing that and being more consistently effective.
Yeah, and they just need like a little bit of finishing and putting another puck in the net, and you start to feel a lot better. And they almost got it right at the start of the second period where we didn't mention earlier, but Johnny Beecher played his first game of the season. He missed, what, the last month or two of last season, and then the first, 8 games of this season. And he had a nice Beecher-esque move where he took the puck down the boards, beat his defenseman, got in tight, put a nice little move on, and he couldn't score. I think he hit the post. He actually moved Charleston like away from the post and then came back and hit it and got a little unlucky there. But it was a really nice move for a guy who, you know, hadn't really done a whole lot for Michigan since maybe last January.
Well, so the thing with Beecher is you see him play and it, you know, you see all of the potential, right? It's all still there. It's the skills, and that's what sets him apart. The size, you know, the ability to really drive play when it's all working in a way that it doesn't for Lambert or Luke Morgan, who have been in that slot. So anytime you get him back, that's definitely a plus.
And with all the talent and ability on this team, he brings something like you were talking about with that size and sort of a big net front presence where he's going to be effective in tight, where they don't really have another guy on the team that's like that. I know you mentioned that Dylan Duke probably can do that, but he's still young and getting his skates under him. But Beecher is third year player, first round.
Beecher
is
a lot bigger too than Dylan.
Yeah.
Duke, so
yeah, he's a lot taller. And so having him in the lineup just adds another sort of option, I would say. Michigan has a couple of plays that they had an open back door on a 2-on-1 that the puck got lost. I think it was in Kelly's skates where could have easily made it 2-2 right after that Beecher play, but the puck kind of got lost in the skates and trickled wide. And that's a situation also where you're like, you know, these are the kinds of things that, you know, are going to keep a team like Michigan State around, where, you know, they have one nice shift and they cash in a shot and then a little bit of a breakdown and you get an open backdoor goal that gets through the pass across on a 2-on-1 and it just goes wide. So Michigan escapes that. KJ draws iron on a charge the other way after that. And again, it's like you're almost there again, but it's still 2-1 in this game. And you actually, before we get to talking about the goals for Michigan at this period, you actually slacked me during the game and you're like, this is what's going on in the first half of the second period, why Michigan was struggling. And you had it that Michigan State was rolling a 2-on-2 forecheck and that Michigan was struggling with the two forecheckers up front, kind of penning in Michigan in their own zone.
Yeah. So MSU was running a forecheck look that it's a 2-1-2 in that you have, you know, F1 and F2, the two forecheckers. But the thing is, normally that sort of forecheck is decently aggressive, and you would not expect a team like Michigan State, who doesn't play very aggressive, to run it. And so what they do is they leave the two defensemen way back. And so what you would have is the defensemen not even across the center line, like way, way back in their half of the ice, yet the two forwards very deep in the offensive zone, almost below the goal line, really chasing the puck handler behind their own net as Michigan's trying to break out. And so what normally happens is you bring the defenseman up to really play aggressive, right? That's the idea of it, is you have the two defensemen at the point to pinch and keep the pressure on. They weren't doing that. They had the defenseman way back there and the third forward sort of in the neutral zone. They were just sending two guys up. So in theory, that shouldn't really work. Normally,
I was about to say, isn't that bad gap control?
Michigan should have three or four guys there able to break out, but they just couldn't get around those two, those two forecheckers. And for whatever reason, their breakouts were not very crisp, and it was really stunting their offensive play for a lot of that second period until they finally broke through.
Do you think it was something that Michigan wasn't expecting in that sense, or was that just sort of like they just struggled with something that Michigan State did? It wasn't necessarily what they did. They just didn't have sort of clean passes or breakouts.
I think that Michigan State is a good a forechecking team aggressively, and I think Michigan probably wasn't as locked in that period of the game as they needed to be, because they eventually got past it. So, it worked for about a 10-minute stretch.
Well, and then that transitioned perfectly into Michigan's goal, that they get the puck in the zone and Michigan State's about to clear it, and Truscott does a pretty good job to hold it in, and Brisson is cutting down the slot. Truscott is at the left point, and Brisson is cutting down the slot as he stops it, and Truscott just puts it right on his tape. It looked like also that the defenseman checking Brisson sort of stopped or didn't continue to skate with him because maybe he thought the puck was getting out or something. And Brisson gets in on Charleston and then fades to the right near the goal line and waits until he's almost at an angle that looks impossible. But at that point, Charleston is down on the ice because he's expecting Brisson to shoot earlier, I assume. And all of a sudden he's just flat and Brisson just hits a very small angle up over Charleston and it's 3-1. I thought that was a really pretty goal. It was really nice from Truscott, especially to keeping the puck in and then hitting Brisson in the tape, but also just a different sort of skill from Brisson to finish in a very small angle.
Yeah, that's the skill that we didn't see a lot of last year, but has been increasingly flashed more and more this season from Brendan Brisson. And another big goal, and obviously you're up 3-1 and you're feeling a lot better given MSU's difficulties in the offensive part of the game.
Up 3-1 and then up 4-1 because not too long after that, and this is, we can talk about Truscott a little bit. It's kind of interesting, but he gets an assist on this play, not quite as flashy as his previous one, but he hits Luke Hughes on the boards. And this is sort of like, I tweeted something like the upside of Luke Hughes. Like, we've talked about sort of the things that he has struggled with this year, which have been a little bit of end zone defense, a little bit of turning the puck over at both blue lines and creating odd man rushes. But this was like the stuff that makes him the top five pick, as he gets the puck on the boards and just absolutely loses the guy in front of him, goes right around him, gets into the slot and just snipes I'm not going to say an easy shot, but it's a short range shot that you wouldn't necessarily expect a goalie to save right by Charleston. It's 4-1. And now that's pretty much it at that point, I thought.
Yeah. The Hughes brothers, they all can do that. Quinn did that plenty, the little wiggle to lose the defender and then drive in. I mean, there's very few players in NCAA hockey who can do anything like that. So you have to savor it when you have it.
Is he the best skater on the team? I was talking to somebody about that, and I'm like, who else is in that conversation? And I was like, Bortolo's pretty deft on his skates.
Bortolo's good on his edges, not as fast as Luke Hughes. And Beniers is close to as fast, so is Morgan.
Morgan's really fast. Yeah.
But neither of those guys can operate on the edges like Hughes.
Yeah, and Hughes just seems to go side to side. He almost looks like he's not even skating. It looks like he's just running on a surface that you can actually get some sort of traction. It's a marvel to watch at times. So it's 4-1 going into the third. I didn't mention this earlier, and now it kind of comes back a little bit. And it's good that there's no note on the guy. But so looking at the lineup chart before the game started, Nick Blankenberg is going to miss this series. And we thought probably Pearson would be playing. He did not. It was Steve Holtz in for him. And I actually thought through the first couple periods, he looked fine. Nothing that was glaring. He didn't have any bad turnovers. He gave Power options to pass. That's the other thing. He played with Owen Power, which was, you had an interesting comment about that early on in the game.
Well, it was totally what the Lightning love to do with Victor Hedman, where normally you have this idea of you want to get the top guy a really good partner and sort of make it like that. But the Lightning, because you can make the Hedman comparison, even though it's not apt for Power overall, they're both big. But what the Lightning love to do with Victor Hedman is they just love to get these like big stiff guys that no one has ever heard of to be Hedman's partner, right? They have really talented defensive core. You look at the 2020 team and you've got Shattenkirk and Chernak and Sergachev and McDonough. And those four guys, none of them played with Hedman. Hedman plays with this guy named Jan Ruda, who really wasn't even really in the league before they found him. And this has kind of like been the pattern. They just love these random guys that are just big and they hit, and that's about it, to play with Hedman. And that's basically what Mel went to, a big guy that can hit that was not really on the team, really, you know, was on the roster, but was never playing. And then suddenly they're trotting him out there in the first pair. So it just reminded me of that a lot.
Yeah. And I thought that he was, like we said, he was fine. And then in the third period, he gets his 15 minutes of fame where something happened, I think, behind the play, and Lochran kind of got tangled up with him, and they kind of had a college hockey fight, I think is what I ended up tweeting, because you can't really fight in college hockey. Like, that's, you know, you just, I don't know. Yeah. You get suspended, I think, or it's a really big deal, but they both like grab each other and drop their sticks and just kind of dance around until one of them falls on the other one. And Holtz took him down. And of course it's 4-1 Michigan, and it's at Yost, and it's, you know, what, 6 days after everybody's frustrating football loss. And so Yost is just going bananas, and this Holtz guy is pounding him into the ice because he's that much bigger. So he sort of had his moment. And then as he's going to the box, he like gets the crowd fired up and like turns to everybody and is like, let's go, and get everybody. So it's just loud as everything in there. And then I think they ended up getting like 10-minute misconducts. And so you didn't even get to see him play basically for the rest of the game. But that was his moment, at least until he played on Saturday.
Yeah, it was definitely injected some life into the game, because after the next couple goals, the game really slows to a halt.
Yeah. And then State does get back into it. And this was a weird goal, I thought, for Michigan to give up, where it looks like Summers is trying to hit Brisson on the near right boards, and the puck, I think, goes off his skate off of a breakout pass, and it just trickles out like into the middle of literally nowhere and is turned over. The Michigan State gets a shot on Portillo, who makes kind of a one big save, and then the puck comes out again, and then it's sort of scramble mode, and the puck is shot in behind him. There should have been a layup dunk. And then, but it goes wide, it comes out the other side, and then it's an easy goal. And I was like looking at that on replay, and I was trying to figure, because it looked like Portillo was caught way out of the net, but he had to come out to make an early save. And then he didn't necessarily really have time, because everything went really fast. No one was really in position. So to me, I sort of put that on the missed breakout. I don't know if it was Summers throwing the puck into Brisson's skates, or if it was Brisson not receiving his pass really well. But that's sort of where it went wrong for Michigan, I thought.
Yeah, that was just a really strange play with the way the puck deflected and everything. I don't really know how much of that you could honestly put on anyone in particular, but you know, MSU still seemed mostly out of it at that point, but obviously getting a goal back brought them a little bit more competitive.
Granowitz then draws a power play, and I think it was about 8 seconds in or so that Sammo just fired from straight away, and with a nice screen from Dylan Duke in front, just completely beat Charleston, and it was 5-2. That's sort of something that we're really starting to see, is Mackie Zamoskevich's shooting ability. Like, he's had about 3 goals now that you look at and you're like, that was a nice shot.
Yeah, he can absolutely shoot the puck. There's no question about that. He's had a few goals this season that are just, you know, rockets, and they're placed in really good spots. And he was marketed as both a passer and a shooter coming out of the draft. And I think we've seen that already this season.
And then did you see the call on Moyle, the hold or whatever? Did you see the review of that, where the two guys are like hanging on each other,
dragging
each other across the ice? So that was, I don't know that I would have called the penalty there, and it's not really worth talking about. It was just kind of funny because they showed the replay on the big board a few times and everybody's booing, and because Michigan didn't win a review against State, obviously, in the football game, and then it somehow carries over to the hockey game. And at some point somebody ended up tweeting, I think it might have been Dilks, who was like, well, Michigan's now 0-9 on their last 9 reviews versus Michigan State, which was kind of pretty funny. The interesting thing there is that Mel challenged something.
Yeah.
Did you follow that?
No, not really.
Because you can't challenge a penalty, can you?
That's what I thought.
So maybe he was challenging like an offside or like a hit to the head on Moyle or something, because, or maybe he was just saying this was such an egregious call that I'm going to challenge something that isn't actually there and see if you give it to me because you're too embarrassed that you made this call.
Hey, worth a shot sometimes.
So it's 5-2 and we're not even near done with the goals as Hughes then, and this is again, so this is a really nice game for Hughes because it's 4-on-4 late in the third and he creates his own goal on this play by just using his skates to get out in front of the guy that was checking him, gets into the neutral zone, gets into the offensive zone. It's a 2-on-1 and he doesn't really get the pass across, but it ends up hitting the defender who sprawls down in front of Charlison and ends up hitting the defender and goes into the net, but not before the defender and Charlison both get knocked into the post, removing the post from the ice. But the puck crosses what would have been inside the post. So had theoretically the post not get knocked off, it would have been a goal pretty obviously.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's the logic. Yeah.
Because they review it. And it's not a goal on the ice. And then when they come back, it is a goal. And it's also a 5-2 game because so it's more or less irrelevant at this point. But I mean, they I think it probably should stand. Isn't that is the rule in the NHL, is it not?
Yes.
So I guess they do get the right call. It was just a weird play. Hughes has his second goal of the night, which, you know, good for him. And then my next note is that Alex has decided to start watching the Raptors.
Well, it was a close game coming down to the wire, and the third period was just an outrageous amount of reviews, and it was a 6-2 game, so I was just kind of like, I've had enough of this.
Did they beat the Knicks?
Well, that was last week. They did beat the Knicks. The game was against the Cavs on Friday night. They led They led every minute, the first 47 minutes and 57 seconds, and then gave up the winning shot at the end.
Well, that's distressing. And then the last thing that I have from this game is KJ had another great pass. I think he had 3 assists on the night, but he's behind the net, and I believe it was a backhand dish to Johnny Beecher, who's alone in front, and he scores. It's 7-2, and they play the Eminem song Guess Who's Back, perfectly timed, I thought, and Beecher gets a goal in his return. And other than a couple of goofy little screw-ups in their own end, I thought Michigan played a really, really good game against a team that a team of this talent should crush a team of Michigan State's talent the way that they did.
Hard to complain when you win 7-2.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
On to Saturday night's game, the game that no one saw because it was strategically placed at the same time as the football game on Big Ten Network Plus, right? And yep. I came back and watched some of it late. They actually announced the score at the football game, which I thought was funny. Like when it was 2-0 in the first period, and they said an update from East Lansing. It's 2-2. Michigan State 0, and like the place went crazy, which was kind of fun. I guess it's sort of fun when they announce other scores like that at games. And then they announced the final later, which was 3-2 Michigan, and everyone was really loud, probably because it was getting cold and everybody just wanted to warm up by like yelling and making the person next to them warm, which is my theory anyway. But so you saw more or less all of it on and off?
Yeah, I mean, I had it on the whole time. Certainly the first period I saw quite a bit of, and then I was just kind of checking in more or less as it kept going along. And then the last probably 10 minutes I was watching pretty closely because it was tight.
Yeah, yeah. And that's I watched a lot of the first period. I watched all the first period, parts of the second, and then definitely all of the third in that sense. So we have a pretty good overall view on it. It started basically like Friday night. Like they pretty much picked up right where they left off. Holtz playing again next to Power instead of Person. A little interesting there. He actually got to play the whole game this time, as he did not get a like 10-minute misconduct, I don't believe, anyway. But I think it was, 45 seconds or 50 seconds in, Power throws a puck to the net from the left point, and they credit him the goal, but go back and then end up giving it to Luke Morgan, who deflected it. And I was like, well, good for Morgan. I'm guessing that he didn't shoot it, but yeah. Deflected it in.
Yeah, no, it was good for Morgan to get that goal, but Power seemed to do most of the work in actually scoring it.
Yeah, and then about halfway through the period or so, Michigan gets a power play, and Beniers just wrist shots one but right through everyone from pretty much straight away at the top of the house. And, you know, we didn't mention this in the first segment. You should be able to tell from the cover of this podcast, but it was Matty Beniers' birthday on Friday night, and this was his third goal. He will actually get one more, I believe, and he'll have four goals on his birthday weekend, which is, I mean, that just seems like you can't almost plan that kind of stuff, right? I mean, that's just, it goes about as well as it could for you personally, I guess.
Pretty good.
Yeah. So it's 2-0. The one interesting note that I put down about the power play when I rewatched it without Blankenberg, at least in this game, to start, I think they went back to their original lineups later, but they broke up their like hero line, I guess, for power play unit one, and they went with KJ Beniers, Power, Lambert, and Nick Pasta. Yeah, he hasn't been here in a while. Mike Pasta down in front. On power play one, and then on two, they went B&B, Samo, Duke, and Hughes up top. So they went with one defenseman per unit and then split up sort of the Bortolo Bresson and the KJ Beniers pairings. And honestly, I kind of liked it because instead of having one all or nothing unit, you now have two units that have a number of guys that can score.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with it. You are able to really mix and match the talent, and those two groups seem to be decently promising in terms of the talent that there is there. So keep trying it out. That's my advice.
And I don't mind a guy like Pasta on the power play in that with the right guys like that, and then getting Duke and Samo some time on the power play, especially playing with other skilled players, is, I think, a good idea too, because Duke hasn't really started this season super quickly in terms of points, and getting him going and getting him some good chances, especially considering who else is on that ice, he's going to be probably overlooked by the defense, and then he kind of fits in nicely in front of the net there too, when you have shooters all around him with Samo and Hughes and Bresson, and then Bortolo is sort of the maestro.
Yeah. Again, it's hard to go wrong when you have that collection of players. So
that's probably true. Just pick names out of a hat and it's going to be better than most. So then a couple minutes later after that power play, Drew DeRitter started for State, and which, I mean, you're not really surprised, right? Because Charleston played on Friday. I didn't think he played poorly. He just got beat by a bunch of goals. And at some point, like, you know, it's not necessarily your fault, but when pucks keep going in the back of the net and the senior is on the bench, you're probably going to give him a shot, which is, you know, fine. And DeRitter's been good, I think, for the last couple of years that we can remember. But he's in net. He tries to reach back sort of behind in the court back right corner of the net to freeze the puck, but he can't quite get it. KJ does a good job of grabbing it, getting it away, and then flips it to a cutting, who else but Matty Beniers flying down the right wing, getting in near the net, and it's 3-0 on just a bang-bang goal. And at that point, you're kind of like, I assume you were, I wasn't actually watching this live, but you were probably like, well, this is probably it for this one. I can't see Michigan State overwhelming Michigan and getting back into this.
That was my thought. 3-0, it definitely seemed to be kind of over, but Michigan State kept fighting, and they had a really strong second period in particular.
Yeah, it was – Michigan didn't really give up a goal in that – or for the majority of that period. It came, I think, about a minute and a half left in the second period, and I went back to look at it because I wanted to know, was this one of their goofy breakdowns or odd man rushes, or did they just, like, hand the puck over in the slot again? But this, it was a weird play where Michigan has the puck in the offensive zone, but they get a couple guys stuck deep and State gets a 4-on-3. And I mean, 4-on-3 is an odd man rush for sure, because there's one extra guy on one side, but it's also like, look, you expect your defenseman to get back and you expect one other guy, probably the center, generally speaking, to be able to get back. And then after that, you know, it basically takes a defenseman to join the rush. And you know, Michigan State is not probably the highest list of teams that you would think are going to be like rushing their D-men up the ice, but they do in this case, and trap two, or they flood the right side, and Michigan ends up using two guys on the right side where their skaters are. And then the last guy gets stuck in the center. Portillo comes out to challenge it, even though there's a guy that's also checking that guy. And the pass goes to the left dot, and the net is pretty wide open. Like, it would have been tough to miss that one. You would have had to just royally hook it, and he didn't. He hit the open net, and it's 3-1. So looking back at it, I watched it a few times, and I couldn't really find a fault other than maybe Portillo shouldn't come out to challenge. But if a guy has the puck in the slot, even if there's a guy on him, you still kind of come out to cut down the angle, don't you?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know the finer points of goaltending too well, but that's what I would say.
So then getting beat by the guy on the wing is more of a fault of just you don't have enough guys back, and not necessarily that the goalie should have been anticipating that pass, because you can't really anticipate a pass like that, I don't think. If a guy's in the most dangerous spot in the ice, you got to be ready, I would think.
Yeah.
So it's 3-1, and it's – I don't want to say it's a fluke goal, but it's in that range. And so you're like, well, whatever. It's not like this is something that's super alarming. And then they go to the break. So it's 3-1, get back. And Michigan State is going to take advantage of another chance right away. A shot from the right point comes from one of the MSU defensemen. And it wasn't really a shot. It was more of an attempt on net that hits. It looked like a Michigan State body who's in sort of the low slot house area and doesn't really get to Portillo. It kind of gets behind him and back to his right. And he's like leaning back and like diving, and his like hand is almost like hovering over the puck, but he doesn't end up getting his hand down on it. It seemed like maybe if he wanted to like scramble to cover it, like it was a fumble, like you see guys on the ground in football where they just like start army crawling almost, maybe he could get to it, but he can't quite freeze it. And a winger comes flying in and just slams the puck into the open net. Muller, I think it was.
Yep.
And it's 3-2. It's also tough to see there if that's like on the guy checking Muller, because, you know, he's probably expecting that puck to be frozen. Also, the puck wasn't shot at an angle where you'd even think that it's on net, because it's way off. It's about 3 or 4 feet outside of the crease in that sense. So it seemed like another just that happens in hockey goals.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, there's not a lot that Michigan could do about that, but it came pretty early in the third period. And so Yes. Then suddenly it's 3-2. And now you're like, well, Michigan's going to have to kind of fight to finish off the sweep in a way that we didn't think early in the game when it was 3-0.
And that's kind of apropos given what happened last time they were at Michigan State playing in Munn, where it was, I believe, 1-1 for a while. Michigan gets a lead, is up 2-1. And with about 5 or 6 minutes to go, they just kind of turn the puck over a couple times and end up losing 3-2. So this is sort of another demon to exercise for Michigan, especially in a building where I believe that the broadcaster said that Michigan only has one win in their last 5 or 6 tries at Munn. So while they have gotten better the last few years under Pearson, winning in Munn has never been something that they've done well as a unit in the last few years. And so having a lead again to kind of extinguish this Michigan State team is something that was a good thing for them to have to try to do. And they pretty much did it. I went over that last whatever remaining 15 minutes were left in the third period. And Portillo never really had to make like a great save. He had a couple of saves, but neither one were like, you know, sprawling Dominic Hasek-esque plays that he has to go from post to post, or he snares a puck out of the air Patrick Waugh style, something like that. It was just like, all right, he's in the right position, got a piece of it, deflected it wide, and or sees it straight on, makes the, you know, pretty generic save. And that was, for the most part, all they really gave up.
Yeah, pretty much. It was a very very impressive performance overall.
Yeah, especially for a run-and-gun team that has sort of known for their offense and trying to outrun people. They just sat on it, took the air out of the game, and held on to their 3-2 lead. A little bit similar to that Minnesota State game after they went up 3-2 earlier on in the season and just outlasted the Mavericks / Screaming Eagles in that one. They also had a couple chances to end it. Like KJ missed a backhander on a 2-on-1 where he just missed the net. And then Brisson hit the post on an empty netter late that the puck just comes right down the ice, hits the left post, and then turns left and sits in the middle of the crease for a little while. And, you know, again, sort of like the Lambert shot from the other night, a couple inches the other way, and it's all but done. But anyway, they didn't end up needing it, and Michigan holds on, wins 3-2, gets the sweep. That's what we've been saying sort of all year. Mentioned it with the Minnesota State game. Didn't do it. They split against Western, dropped the second half of that Wisconsin series, and had a nice bounce back against an inferior opponent. And the other thing I thought was interesting is, you know, they gave up 18 shots, or Portillo made 18 saves, one of the two, and it was like 6 per period, right? So it wasn't like there was this rush of chances that they faced. It was just like, yeah, you get a few in this period, you get a few in this period, you get a few in this period. We're just going to control this game.
Yeah, the best way you close out a game like that is just to totally dominate and to control the puck. And they did that for the most part. Portillo made a couple saves here and there, but overall they did enough.
They only gave Michigan State 2 power plays in the game and only 1 shot on those power plays combined. And this Michigan State team actually has a better power play, or percentage-wise. They're, I think, coming into this series, they were around 30%, which is pretty good. And Michigan completely outchanced them on Friday, as we mentioned before, with that bevy of odd man rushes, and then gave up pretty much nothing in this game. One shot that you're forcing a save in about 4 minutes is, I mean, I think everybody signs up to do that. So they did get a power play goal, scoring on the power play again for the second game in a row. It's pretty good. I did watch one of their power plays then late in the game, and they did go back to their big five hero line unit. So maybe that splitting up was only like an experiment or trying something, or someone had to sit out or something like that. But I wouldn't mind seeing them go back to it in this series upcoming or in the future, because I do sort of like that 2 equal lines.
Yeah, I would agree. We'll see what they decide to go with that moving forward.
So looking around the Big Ten, obviously Michigan gets their sweep, makes everybody feel a little bit better, eases a little bit of the pain from the football game, and Notre Dame sweeps Holy Cross on, I believe that was Thursday, Friday, 5-2 and 4-1. I have pretty much nothing else to add on that. Do you have an in-depth review of that series?
No, Holy Cross is not in a power conference. So
are they in Atlantic school, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yes, They're going to make the tournament, them and two others. Wisconsin played Minnesota and split, kind of. Minnesota won the second game, I believe, like 4-1, and they lost the first game 4-3, but it was in overtime, so they only dropped 2 points instead of the three. It would have been nice if they dropped three, but they did not. They did get to overtime, securing wait, do I have that wrong?
No.
Oh, no, no, no. Yeah, you're right. They dropped the 2 points. Yeah. Okay. And then, but, you know, any points that Minnesota drops to not Michigan or Notre Dame, I think is good. And it's sort of a gift in a way. I think that's how Michigan and Minnesota are going to look at that, is like when you drop points to Wisconsin, which Michigan did last weekend, and then, or, you know, Penn State, Ohio State, that whole crew, it's sort of like stuff that you weren't expecting.
Yeah.
The games were in Madison, though, so, you know, you can kind of expect the home team to kind of pull something out at some point there. Ohio State and Penn State played, and Ohio State swept Penn State 5-2 and 4-1. That's interesting. I looked a little bit deeper, and Penn State, I think, had better numbers overall in terms of, like, puck possession and shots and everything. Their goalie, how do you pronounce his last name for Ohio State?
My understanding is it's Dobish.
Dobish had 33 saves on Friday and 33 more on Saturday. So even though his team got him a bunch of goals, he still backed them up and did not give up very many and ended up keeping it not super close, because I believe Penn State scored first in both games and then Ohio State scored with a rush of goals. I looked and I think that Ohio State's only given up like 12 goals this year, or maybe it's just in conference, but.
But, you know, it's the tough thing with them is still gauging who they've actually played, because I'm still not really sold on Penn State. Their sort of signature win, remember we discussed, was a game where they were like massively outchanced in and just sort of like it was a goaltending meltdown, at least in terms of what the stat sheet looks like. And then outside of that, they played a very soft, mostly Atlantic non-conference. So we'll see about them. And Ohio State hasn't played a lot of teams either. And, you know, they played MSU and Penn State, who were the other two teams I had in that sort of bottom tier. And they did lose to Bentley and the non-con. So, you know, we're just trying to still figure out how good any of these teams are. And this weekend they go to Minneapolis, so I think that will be interesting.
Well, we should find out a little bit there. So Michigan, as we said early on in the broadcast, goes to Penn State. It's Thursday, Friday, not Friday, Saturday. Good for us football folk. I believe Thursday is on BTN at 8 p.m., a little bit of a late start, and then Friday night, I believe, is on BTN at 7. So that's a little bit earlier. I just go through the numbers I found on Penn State. They're fifth in Corsi, which, surprise, they shoot the puck as soon as it gets on their stick, pretty much from anywhere on the ice. They're 13th in pairwise. Take that what you will, because, like you said, some of their wins are not the most impressive. They do score 25% on the power play, which is good to dangerous. And their PK is actually up this year. It's at 87%, small sample sizes, but they have three drafted skaters and four skaters scoring above 0.75 points per game. And Oscar Adio, I took him as their goalie because I think he played in six of their nine games and his numbers are pretty solid, 2.17 and 0.917 save percentage, which is not elite, but it's not terrible either.
Yeah. Penn State, tough to say what they really are, but we'll find out. I mean, they're always a team that when you talk about Corsi, you'd really love to have an expected goals model because they just take a ton of shots. And that's what Corsi's based off of. And so you don't really know what the shot quality is. So, you know, we'll see. I'm interested to see Audio because Peyton Jones was such a big part of what they were able to do when Penn State was really good in terms of saving a high percentage of the A-plus looks that they give up. And Audio showed some decent stuff last season. We only played Penn State twice last year because of the COVID break. So,
and it was really early.
It was early. It was in December. So it'll be interesting. I'm curious to see what Penn State looks like, but based off of preseason expectations, I think Michigan is the favorite here.
Do you think we'll get their radio screamer.
Yeah, the Friday night broadcast. The avalanche of goals guy.
Avalanche of goals!
Probably. I would say that I wouldn't expect a lot of change in terms of who's doing that. And my understanding was he was like their radio guy, more or less. Something like that. So
they're Al Randall.
Yeah.
Or Alex Drain. Used to be Alex Drain.
Yeah.
Do you miss it?
You know, calling hockey is fun. We'll leave it at that.
All right. Do you have anything else to wrap up either this weekend or looking forward to next weekend that was on your mind?
Not particularly. You know, this is another opportunity for Michigan to bank some points. And, you know, if they can move to 10-2, then we can continue to feel pretty good about the season. So hope for that.
Yep. I think at least definitely winning one and then getting points in the second game is a must. I'd like to see them get two. I think that Michigan is probably more talented than Penn State and has performed better. And I believe the points are there if Michigan plays well enough.
I would agree. Thank you for listening to Michigan HockeyCast 4.6 for Alex Drain and David Nasternak. Come back next week, and we're talking about a team you don't really like, Notre Dame.